Hello, everybody. Welcome to Uncovering Midrash, Parshat Vayera. Sorry, Parshat Chayesara. That was last week's one. Okay, right? We just, right, so Chayesara this time. So we're going to be getting into today. We're going to try and figure out who is Keturah. So this is at the very end of Parshat Chayesara. So we see that after Avram finally, has already buried Sarai Menu. He's already married off Yitzchak, found Rivka. Things are going great. Then all of a sudden he decides, now it's time to take the other wife. And he goes out and he marries Keturah. So the question is, who is Keturah? So let's ask the audience, who do we think she is? Is she somebody we know or is she somebody brand new? What do we think?
My I think we know.
What was that?
Hagar.
Somebody we
know. Hagar.
Hagar.
Hagar. Okay, I'm hearing a lot of Hagars. Anybody else? So if I heard Izzy saying Hagar, I think maybe Nathan also. Anybody else saying Hagar? So we got at least two or three Hagars. Anybody want to vote for somebody else? Meaning like it's not Hagar. The other team.
I always thought it was somebody different.
Okay, so Elaine is saying somebody different. So everybody is right. Each of you have picked the side of a different Amora. So now we're going to get to the. So don't worry, no matter what you picked, you were right. But the question is, which one do we find more convincing? And that's what we're going to try and find out. Okay, so here we go. So again, remember this pasuk well. By Yosef, Abraham, by Kath, Isha, Ushma, Keturah. So, right, and Avram took another wife, and her name was Keturah. So again, this is a rather long pasuk. So the question is, what are we getting at? And all right, so all these extra words are going to be important. So now let's see what that means. So here we go. Okay, so you see on the right side, so this is all the same from Sepharia, right? So we've got the Hebrew on the right, English on the left. So who voted for? Somebody voted for Hagar is going to be reading Rav's opinion, and somebody voted for Benichemia who voted for and being somebody new will read the other side. So
didn't listen to Chaim.
Okay. Okay, Grandma Zeta, I'm going to mute you. Okay. Just careful. Okay, I'll mute you in a bit. Okay. Okay. So Izzy, I see you were very strong on the Hagar side. So you'd like to take it away from with Rav's opinion. You can read either the Hebrew or the English, your choice. So Izzy, see the screen? So read either the Hebrew or the English.
Who are you asking?
See where
it says. Rav Hagar.
Right. So now I believe Elaine, you voted for somebody new.
Yeah.
So you're going to read the parts of Rabbi Nechemiah. So you get the next line.
Okay. Rabbi Nechemiah said to him, and is not written, he added, he said to him, that signifies that he now married her according to the divine word.
Oh, wait. Sorry. Each paragraph we switch off. Okay. So now it's back to Izzy. Right. So the question is the word Vayosef means another one added. What's up? How do you think it's the same wife? It's a new wife. So, Izzy, what's the answer?
Amar le al pi adibur nisa. Hey, ma dat amar yishaya pres hey. By Yosef Hashem daber elai od. So he said to him, and it is not written, and her name was Keturah. He said to him that the significance
The paragraph about
marry her according to divine word like that.
Okay, 1 second, slow down. I think we missed the paragraph here.
And the Lord added.
You're supposed to say, and he said to him, that signifies he now married her according to the divine word, like that which you said in Isaiah, and the Lord added to speak to me more. Okay, so the response being is that no, the word by Yosef just means. We're talking again, but again means the same woman, so therefore it can still be Hagar. Okay, do we like that argument? Yes, no?
Can you repeat that and explain it better?
Okay, will do. Okay, so Rabbi Nechemiah had said, but it says Vayosef, and he added another. So the response of Rav was, what it means, he added another, it means that now he marries her with another authority, meaning now God agrees to the marriage. Originally, who the first time that Abraham married Hagar, that was, she was only married because Sarah wanted to use her as a surrogate to have kids. But now she's marrying Hagar outright since Sarah has passed away. So therefore, we've changed our perspective on it, and that's why. So that'd be the difference. Okay, so that's why, and how does he prove that Vayosef can still mean that it's within the same conversation? So to that's why he quotes the case from Yishayahu Vayosef Hashem Daber Elai Od, that God kept on speaking to me. So Vayosef doesn't mean a new conversation, it means a continuation. Okay, so that was Rav's defense for Rabbi Nechemiah. So now, yes, Moshe, you raise your hand. What's your question?
Doesn't Yosef mean in addition, Yosef Li Hashem Ben Acher, which is where Yosef gets his name from? So wouldn't that be implicit that he is, that it's something new?
Correct. Right. That's the initial assumption. That's the whole, that's what Rabbi Nechemiah's argument was, that it's got to be something new. So the response of Rav is, well, there is one case where it's not something new, but it means a continuation. So Rav's quoting the one case when it's the exception to the rule. He's quoting the pasuk in Yeshayahu, which is a continuation. So you're right. Vayosef, according to the simple understanding, means another, something new. But there is one case where it seems to be mean a continuation, and that's the one that Rav is sticking to. So if you think that this doesn't really sound like a good answer, you'd probably be right. But again, this is Rav and Rabbi Nechemiah. So each have different opinions, right? So again, how did you conclude in the end is a separate story. But that's where we're currently at. Okay, so that was Sukkot. So the initial argument is, right, Rav tries saying it's Hagar, and then the obvious answer is like, it's another name. All right, somebody else. It even says it's another wife, which implies it's a new wife. So then Rav's like, but again, you can see the Gemara cup right here. Because he says, what did he add? He added another wife because he married her this time, not as a Pilegesh. Right beforehand, she was just, you know, a surrogate given via Sarah, but now she's married properly. Albeit, we'll see, she's only be Legesh. We'll get to that in a second. And then at the end, we see that, right? And then, and he says that the word Vayosef, which is the other support that Rabbi Nechemiah had, we say we don't like that support because he says Vayosef could mean a continuation, as we see it happens in Yishayahu. So since it could happen as a continuation, that might be the case. Clear? We're all caught up? Yes? Okay, I'm seeing some head nods, so I'll take that as a good sign. Okay, so now we're back to Rabbi Nechemiah, Elaine, for the line over here. Were you saying else? So you see over here, the Amarle? Oop. And we just transitioned. Sorry about that. Can we see that? Here, pointer. Oh, there we go. That's much better. Here we go. Okay. This line right here. Hebrew or in English, it'll be over here. Oh, Elaine, you're muted. So let me help you out there.
Sorry, I was muted.
Okay. Go for it. Hebrew or English? Your choice.
And he said to him, is it not written that her name was Keturah?
Right.
Amar so, Lev, V'hakativ Ushma Keturah.
Right. So this is the strongest argument. Her name is Keturah now. Her name was Hagar. How did we change her name? Like, I don't understand. Like, what did you do? So now we're back to Rav's opinion. Okay, now we're back to Rav defending himself. So, Izzy, take us away.
He said to him, and is it not written, and to the sons of concubines that Avram had?
No, I'm higher up. See where the...
He said to him, it is since she was fragrant. No, we just read that. We could to read that with commandments and good deeds. So she did tshuva.
Right. So why is her name now Keturah, even though it's the same person? Because she did tshuva.
Smelled good.
Right. So that's
good order. Good odor of tshuva.
Correct.
Good smell.
Yeah. Right. So that's how it changed.
You're breaking up.
I'm breaking up again. Okay. Right. So that's how we're saying it. How it changed. Based on, right, so sure her name is new, because she's as if she's a new person because she did tshuva. So that's our answer. Now she's seemingly much better. So then there's only one problem. We have one last problem with this. Right? So seemingly that sounds like a good reason to get a new name. You did tshuva, you know, like you're turned over a new leaf, you're a new person. So does that sound a good argument to everybody?
Yeah. I like it.
Right. Some like it, some don't like it, but it's an argument. But we're not done.
It's not original.
This is the original argument. So maybe it was back then. You never know. So I can't remember which movie it was. Someone with time travel. Where somebody fell for the oldest trick in the book, and then he realized, wait a minute, I'm 3,000 years ago. This might be a brand new trick. So you never know. So, okay. So now we're back to Elaine for another question, Rabbi Nechemia. So Hebrew English. So over here, and so Hebrew
over here. He said to him, and is it not written, and to the concubines? Of the concubine in the singular, that there's only one concubine, Hagar.
Right. Okay. So, right. In the pasuk, it says, right, v'nei pilakshim. Doesn't it say pilakshim plural? So the answer is, right. Sorry. Elaine had the line above. And it's not written to the sons of the concubines, plural, right? Pilag Shim. And then the answer, right? And it's not written to the sons, Pilag Shim, plural. And then the answer we have from Izzy Amarle, Pilag Sham, Div.
Is right? The actual written concubine? Amarle, yeah.
Right. So that seems great, right? So that's, you know, that's the answer. That you know, maybe Drasha, based on the way it's spelled, that since it's spelled without a yud, therefore, all's well. So that's why. So it's hinting that there's something else going on by there being the missing yud. Because you'd expect there to be.
What's the white?
Because if we say there's multiple pilag shim, so pilagish number one would be Hagar. And because number two would be Keturah, because Avram had three wives, had a wife. The true wife was Sarah, and then there was two concubines, Hagar and Keturah. So that's why Pilag Shim. So right. So
how do you know Keturah was a concubine, not a wife? Does it say?
Sarah was deceased.
Right. So the answer is it doesn't say it explicitly in the verse, but it seems to be. Implied by the following pasuk, where it says the sons of Pilakshim, and it lists all the kids of Keturah as well as so therefore that's how you know that Keturah was taken as Pilagesh, and back when Sarah gave Hagar over, so she didn't give him over as a wife, she gave her Sarah gave Hagar as a means of having children, not as a wife to Abraham, which is that's the role of the Pilegesh as opposed to the role of the wife.
But it says for Keturah, Yikach Isha Ushma Keturah, Ta'isha is wife.
Right. But is it technically, Vayikach Isha can also simply mean he took a woman. Kind of like the way that in the literal sense, like literally took her, kind of how Paro took Sarah and Abimelech took Sarah. They didn't marry her proper. They simply brought her home. Which in a Pilegesh agreement is basically all you did. You didn't do Kiddushin, you didn't do Nisuin, you simply brought her home, and then that was that. For more on Hilchos Pilegesh, you can see it in the Rambam and elsewhere, but I'd like to, it's a whole complicated, I mean, it's a separate discussion we can have if you'd like, but I feel like that might get a little far afield. But the way we know that she was a Pilegesh is because when it says the sons of the Pilegeshim, it's referring to the sons, it's referring to her children. So that's how we know she was married as a Pilegesh, not as a full wife. Okay? But excellent question. Right. So that, again, it's implied by the verses. You're right. It does seem to contradict the first language and the last language. So yeah. And so the language of Vayikach Onisha would support more towards the reason why, again, that Al Pi Adibur Nesa'ah, that he married her properly. Now that's what it would imply in this case. So you're right. It does actually transition in the middle, and it's just a little unclear how that plays out. So, excellent point. But we're not quite done. There's one more source that we should know to prove that we know that it's Hagar as opposed to keturing somebody else. So, in the last pasuk, it says when he sends off the children of the concubines. So the pasuk has extra words about Denu Chai while he is still alive. So Izzy, could you read the last retort of Rav where he seemingly wins the argument?
Izzy, while he was still alive?
Yeah.
That part?
Yep.
While he was still alive, Chai. This is a reference to the one that your bar is in the way now.
Oh, sorry.
I can't see.
Oops. Let me move the. Oops. And.
Rishi Chapei. I can read it out of the Chumash. I can read it out of the Chumash.
And now the whole thing just. Sorry. And it just.
Chapei Bav, yeah?
Yeah. You can read it now? Sorry about that. Let me.
But to the children of the concubines who are Avram's, Avram gave gifts. Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, exactly. Let me put it back on. Let me just put it back on.
I can see.
You can see it now? Okay, fine.
While he was still alive, this is a reference to the one that sat by the well and said to the life high of the world, look at my embarrassment.
So what is that? So what is that story referencing? I was like, what? I'm trying to get this back to here. Here we go. Back to the full screen. Sorry about that. I'll move this bar out of the way. Oh, and the bar went away. There we go. Okay. Right. So what is this story referring to? So I'm going to help you out. This is a fragment that's referencing the previous midrash. So we're going to go to the full to understand what this means. What did the Enuchai and has to do with this? Like this cryptic thing. We're gonna look at the previous midrash to fill in the blanks. So here we go. So what do you mean by her shame, right? What is that? So to this, we have to look back a little while ago to the last innocent, one of the previous stories we had involving Hagar, which is when Hagar is pregnant with Ishmael. She had ran away to Be'er Lachai Ro'i, right? She ran away to the desert, and then the angel comes to her and says that I have found you, right? And says, you suffer through, it'll be okay. And so then she decides to name the well where she's found Be'er HaRavi, because God has seen my afflictions, because, well, the Jews were being, sorry, not the Jews, because Sarah was seemingly being cruel from Hagar's perspective, and therefore she decided to change the therefore she named the well after having been greeted by the angel. So now the reason why we're connecting this story to that story is because what do we have in the previous parak towards the very end, when we see Yitzchak returning, Yitzchak mibo, right? So Yitzchak is arriving from where? So for some reason, right, when Rivka is coming back after being brought by Eved Avraham all the way back from Haran, Yitzchak is returning from Be'er L'Chayroi. And the question is, why on earth was Yitzchak a Be'er L'Chayroi? That seems to be a place where, like, why wasn't he at home? Like, that's super weird. Like, didn't he know that his father sent his most trusted servants to go get him a wife? Why is he busy, being somewhere else right now? So to answer that question, we have another midrash. Okay, does everybody see the midrash here? Bereshit Rabba Samach Yudalit, right? So our current one, I'll just go back and then forth. So the previous one we had, again, this is Samach Aleph. Okay, this is Samach Yudalit. So again, it's like right before. Okay? So if you're flipping through it, through the midrash in the most nice printed ones, it's like the page, like the right one page earlier, right? It's right there. So what happened there? So we have volunteered to read Hebrew or English. Who'd like?
What do you want to be read?
Read the. The English here of this midrash of the well.
No, and Yitzhak came, that one?
Yeah.
And Yitzhak came and he arrived from somewhere. Where did he go? The well Lechai Roi. He went to bring Hagar, she who sat by the well, and said to he who lives forever, Hashem, see my shame.
Right, so Be'er HaRoi, right? So again, here the Roi, right? It's not just that God saw me, but God also saw my, what did he see? He saw my shame. So that's what they're referencing here. That this is, why do we know? So another good support for why we think that Hagar is Jura is because otherwise, how do we explain why Yitzchak was not there at the time? So based on this ending to the to the midrash, it seems like who won the argument? Who won, Rav or Rabbi Nechemia? Was Hagar Keturah or somebody else?
Thank you.
Thank you.
It looks like
Rav. Who got the last word in, Rav or Rabbi Nechemia? I think it was Rav, right? Rav got the last word, and whoever gets the last word in wins. So seemingly Rav won. So at least that's the version, at least that's how the midrash seems to go. Right? So seemingly, right, Hagar is Keturah, that's how Rashi takes it. Right? That's even the conclusion of the story. But it's always worth taking a little bit closer look at the story to see if all these supports are actually correct or if we can knock any of them out. So we'll start with this current support. Could you have said another reason why Yitzchak left? Right, why would Yitzchak have been a Be'er L'Chayroi? So you could say, again, in our case, it had ended already, but you could have said, I know where it ended. It ended because, you could say that maybe he left because, he didn't want to be at home. Maybe it was stressful being at home and he wanted to, go out to the desert and relax. Or maybe he wanted to pray and he knew that was, a good place to go. Who says that? And also, at this point, that the place where Hagar would have been Egypt, right? Because she went down south, right? But farther south, because Yishmael ended up marrying somebody from Egypt. So maybe she's all the way down there. And then Beerlath Harui is in Egypt, and then maybe she's not there. So that'd be one way you could have responded, but since Rabbi Nechemiah didn't give that response, he seemed like he accepted what Rav said, and that would be that. So we also need to check, again, some of the sources that we saw, each of the proofs. So again, so some of them were pretty straightforward proofs, some of them quoted psukim. So it's always important to check the original psukim to see if they're actually what they see. Let's check. So one of the things to check is in the pasuk of in the Yishayahu, right? Vayosef Hashem deber Eli od lemor, right? And again, the Lord spoke to me thus saying, right? That one, that pasuk, all there, seems to be a pretty straight read of that one. And then, on the other hand, let's take a look at the other pasuk that was quoted. The pasuk about the Pilag Shim. So, which one is quoted correctly? Which one is quoted? So there's two, we had two quotes. Okay, so one of the quotes of that pasuk was based on the words, Livnei HaPilag Shim. And it says, it's written Pilag Sham. Another one says, based on the words, Bodenu Chai. So which one of those words is wrong in the pasuk that we have in front of us? So the words Bodenu Chai, they're there. So again, so that seems okay. What's wrong? The word Pilag Shim, what's wrong with it?
Plural.
It's written plural. But wasn't the whole support that is written singular? What's up? How is that possible? So in case you're wondering if this is a new issue, it's not. Right? The question is, how on earth could it be written the wrong thing? Like, how could this be? So for this, so let's take a look at, so if you ever are wondering, you know, is this the right version of Chumash or Tanakh? The person to go to is the Minchat Shai. Okay, so Minchat Shai is a commentary written in the beginning of the 16th century. It was written after the first printing of Nekrot Gedolot, where they had a lot of mistakes. So the Minchat Shai made his business to make sure that he corrected all the mistakes that had come up. So now we're gonna we hear him talking about our question exactly. What happens when there's a midrash that seemingly has a different spelling than what we have in our Chumashim? Who wins? Midrash or Tanakh or Tanakhs? Who'd like to take this away? And everybody can see that, yes? It's still clear? Sorry, notice that my computer didn't know the mission cut off. Okay. Okay, everybody sees this? Here's some sacred hours. Okay. So, Moshe, would you like to read the English or the Hebrew? Your choice. For the... For Minchat Shai on the question of what to do when there's conflict in tradition.
Ukvar kidamti lach ki b'chol makom she hagemara o midrash cholek al hamasorot b'chasirot v'yisirot anu hochim achar hamasoros.
Okay.
Lomi by bid
shoshal. Pause there. I'm going to explain some of those words because I'm guessing most people don't know what all those words meant. So here we go. So I mentioned before that whenever the Gemara or the Midrash argues with the Masoret, the Masoret is our Masoretic text. That's our version of Tanakh. And Chayrot and Yeterot means, do you spell things full or in short? Meaning when you say, meaning Cholam Chaser versus Cholam Malay, Chirik Malay versus Chirik Chaser. Right? Do you, we guys, so let's say in our case, that would be, is it Pilag? Would you have the yud there or not the yud there? Or when there's the O sound, is there a vav there or not a vav there? Is it a shuruk or is there a right? Or not, right? Or is there a vav there doing it instead, right? So which one is it? So when those cases happen, so he said, we always follow the Masoretic text. Okay? Okay, continue motion from Volomabaya.
Okay, velomi bae bidrashot shel agada kegon pilgasham.
So don't worry about the midrash agada that we have, such as pilgasham, which is our midrash. There's also a couple others he mentions, kalat, ashamam,
kalat.
So these are other cases that if you see where Rashi says it says kalat k'tiv, even though it's instead of kalot, even though it's written kalot in our version, or it's saying right v'ashamam, even though we have written being ashamim. Again, Rashi also comments on that as well. So and then even in this case, right? So then take elafilu.
So
even sometimes it'll work out that the way you read it is machloka ben shammai hillel, but even so, we don't change it.
Uvar min din dekulu safrei besafarya hachisfir lehu v'lesbahon plukta klal.
And similarly, if you look at all of our books, I mean, not counting these, but like all of our written books, we'll see that there is no actual argument in, like, again, even though, you know, Rashi said it, but every version of the Torah that we have says one way. So something's got to give. So
Uveshalas Atruvus Haramban Zikron Libracha Simon Reshlam and Bezd. Nish'al alzeh.
Right. So if you're worried, this is a new question. Don't worry. It's again, this is him writing in the 16th century, but this is he's saying that it was already asked in the 12th century, late 12th century, when the Truba is actually to the Rashba, not to the Ramban. That was a printer's error, which will, again, that might relate to this as well. But we'll, yeah. So. Right, this is a question that was asked already. Somebody was reading Rashi and looked at the Chumash and was reading and like reading the Torah. They're like, "Wait, this doesn't work." So what did he say? We're at V'divrei Hashoel. Let me get the pointer back up. That'll be helpful. Yeah, we're over here. V'divrei Hashoel. See that, Moshe? V'divrei Hashoel Tzmiya Ma'od Be'inai. It'll take over for a bit then. Right? V'divrei Hashoel Tzmiya Ma'od Be'inai Kilo Sha'al Kohogen. And what the questioner has asked is surprising to me because he didn't ask properly. V'mahabeth Yersada Gemara V'gam Nuzhar HaTzfarim. And because he's busy conflating the difference between the Gersa that we have in the Gemara versus what we have in our Sifrei Torah. They don't have to agree. Ulai Hatash Gagahyot State. Remember, it could have been a printer's error, what you see in Rashi or somewhere else. It could have been a copyist error. So therefore you can't really say anything of that. Yeshiv loha Ramban Zal, and what was the response of the Ramban, or the Rashba, as we know nowadays? So the b'chol makom, afilu b'chasirot v'yeterot, metaknin mi'ut svarim al pi harov, the mikra male liber hakatuv acharei rabim lato. We know this is the case, that you should amend that wherever there are, again, cases of added letters or less letters, that you would amend the minority versus the majority. And that's what we say, Acharei Rabim Lato, that whenever you have a machloket of yourself, if the majority say one way, that's the right one, and the minority we say is mistaken, and then we let it slide. That would be that. So this would be a very excellent conclusion. And we would say, there we go. We don't need to worry about it. It must be all of your soda wrong. So the only problem is that within the girsa itself of the Shulchan Aruch Rashba, there's a machloket as to what he actually said. So let's head over to the let's see. Okay, I think we'll hopefully have enough time here. So I'll point out the relevant lines. So again, so we notice here we're saying where we had mentioned. But here on the right over here, again, Hebrew's on the right, English is on the left. So again, so he talks about a whole bunch of differences in terms of where he historically thinks there were differences between different traditions. Talks about the differences between how each area you trust your rabbanim in the area, odds that they knew what they're talking about. He mentions the difference between the Ben Asher and the Ben Naphtali traditions. So again, if we have time at the end, I'll get back to that as to what each of the parts of this is. But for now, let's focus in on the part that's relevant to understanding the should we be able to change our girsot or not. So the question comes down to when he says the word, when he gets to the word, this is still background. Sorry, it's the next, it was in this part. Here, the question we get to is when you, how do you read this line over here? So the question is, what this question about the Girsa, is the version of the Rashba, right? Is it mitakmin hamiut, right? That you change the minority, or is it mitakmin al pi hamiut? Depending on how you would, on which girsa you have, you would end up getting a very different conclusion. So, how do we paskin? So we paskin that you'd say that we care about only the ones that are in midrash, that are in midrash halacha, but not in midrash agada. So that's the way that the day we the paskining. If there's a ma'akim Midrash halacha, again, not the same way, again, how you do that into the Rashba is a separate question. But, right, so it comes down to difference between Midrash Agadah and Midrash halacha. Midrash Agadah is not necessarily authoritative, but a Midrash halacha would be, right? So if you learn halacha out of it, let's say by, you know, Tov Tzafot, right, that's written chaser, so that would be a case where, or let's say by Sukkot, or by Kranot, by, you know, by the corners of the bath. So each of those are there. Those chaser malays are actually ma'akev lahalacha, and we make a drasha based on it being malay versus chaser. So those ones, those matter. But if it's not one of those, then we don't need to worry about it. So that's the rough conclusion. Understood? I didn't go too fast there. Let me just explain that again. So again, so we have a conflict between a comment between, let's say, it seems like Rashi had one version, or the Midrash had one version in Midrash Agadah, so we're not bothered by it, right? So that's perfectly okay. The question comes down to when you have a Midrash Halacha, do we paskin according to the Midrash Halacha or not? Meaning when we learn an actual Halacha from this spelling of the word, that's the question. So, and that's where it comes down to the machloket of the girsa, of which version of the Rash, of the Tshuva HaRashba you have. So again, the way we generally paskin nowadays is that we thought that if it's a difference in Midrash Halacha, then that matters, but Midrash Agadah does not. For more on the list of the, I give more of which opinions say which, but at a certain point, I think I might be a little confused. Using everybody to go into all of the details of that part. So, is this clear, more or less?
Rabbi, I have a question. Does this,
please?
So, do we use that to determine the kriyuksiv that we see all the time in the Torah?
So, kriyuksiv is actually
a lot of times you'll see.
Right. So, kriyuksiv is a.
Isn't that just a printing error?
No, the kriyum ktiv is when there's two is and that's actually we have that be the mesora, right? Meaning when we say the Masoretic text, so that means that we have a mesora that it is written this way but read another way. So that's halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. I think that's the correct way to do things. So that's not the same type of is this, so those are intentional, meaning those aren't an accident or a mistake. That's that yes, it's written this way, but you're supposed to read it another way. That's creative. That's deliberate, meaning that's a deliberate feature of the text, as opposed to this, which seems like it's an argument between different versions of the text. Does that make sense, Nathan?
Yep, sounds good.
Okay, just making sure. So, okay, so now see, we have a couple more minutes. So, so there's a lot of interesting things mentioned by this Shita Rashba. So, I guess I'll go over them in passing. If you'd like to hear more about it, I'm happy to give to dedicate more time at some point towards one of them. So, I'll just explain in passing some of the things that were mentioned in his distinctions. So, one is there's two different schools of scribes known as Ben Asher and Ben Naphtali. Who were also called Masoretes, who their whole profession was copying over very exact forms of Tanakh, right? They're the ones who, you know, if you've ever seen the Aleppo Codex in the Israel Museum, so that is actually the best example of, and is possibly, according to the Rambam, as being the best version of Tanakh that exists, right? And that is in the Ben Asher tradition, which is viewed to be the better version, right? The two schools of scribes, Ben Asher and Ben Naphtali, right? Ben Asher was paskened to be the better one. So similarly, we talked about differences in the Shuvah of the Rashba. He also talks about differences between East and the West, which means there's differences we see between, let's say, the Talmud Yerushalmi versus the Talmud Bavli, right? People living in Israel and people living in Babel, Babylonia, so they had, it seemed like they had slight differences also in terms of the way they used to read certain words of the Torah, possibly spellings as well. And so, and he notes that this, again, that again, all in terms of the way you enunciate, and then again, if you search on Google for, you know, Ben Asher, Ben Naphtali, look at the differences between the two of them, similar differences between Israel, the Jerusalem Talmud and the Babylonian Talmud, there are tons. I could go on for days about that. So that's just something to mention. And then also, I'd like to point out the last little bit we had here of the rock where he mentions the fact that this isn't a new issue. The first time this happened actually happened in the time of Ezra HaSofer. So the question is, so why is Ezra HaSofer called Ezra the Scribe, right? How did he get that title? So Rosetta Sofer talks about the story. It's also quoted elsewhere as well in fuller form. So it mentions how when the time of Ezra, there was three different Sefer Torah, and they had different features. So again, they're called Ma'on, Zatute, and Sefer Hu. So, right, so which are three different, I mean, there's three different types of mistakes mistakes or versions that we had in each of these. One of those would have the word, let's say, the case of the word ma'on versus ma'ona, right? Which looks a lot like which is a question of chaser or male, right? Do you have the extra hay there to pronounce it ma'ona, or do you not have the extra hay there? And there's also a case of zatute, which means there's cases where sometimes the words are written, yeah, not in the Torah, this happens in some parts of Tanakh where you see two different versions of a word. Sometimes it's a word you recognize, sometimes not. So the switching between the words atute and are, one of those is a common Hebrew, one of those is less common Hebrew. And there's also the case of sometimes the word being pronounced who versus he, or spelled who versus he. And so what Ezra did is he was machrir yourself, right? He was the one who had the he knew the way to do it, and he decided that whenever there's two versions of the Torah that said, of the three main versions that existed, if two of them said one thing, the third said the other one, he passed like the majority over the minority. And that's how we, and that's, you know, what Ezra Sofer did, and that's what he passed to us for how we should do so as well, moving forward. Okay? So to say that this is a new issue, it's not. Yeah, but unfortunately, we don't have Ezra and Sofer nowadays to solve these issues. So we have to solve it through other manners as well. Can't happen to get more about each and every part of this. Again, I have taken courses on this that take several months. All that YU took it both an undergraduate and graduate level. So like, yes, this is like the question of dealing with the various yourself and how you differentiate is literally a course in and of itself. So, but we'll leave that aside for now. And now we'll go ahead to the wrap up. Okay, so let's just summarize what we've covered, and then I'll open the floor to questions. Again, for bands to leave, they're welcome to leave. If they want to stick around, they can. So again, what have we discussed so far? So again, was Keturah Hagar? So Rav was saying yes, and Rav Nechemya was saying no. They went back and forth. And end of the day, Rav gets the last word. So it seems like Rav won the argument. Again, we saw each of the textual proofs, and then we realized that one of those textual proofs was actually, again, not a question of like, again, could you debate, did he read it right or not? That's one type of argument. Here was like, wait, he had a different reading or he had a different word than we did in his Chumash. That's a problem. So, and then we said that, again, what wins? The Masoret or the Agadic tradition? And we said that the Masorah and the Midrash Halakha is definitely stronger than the Midrash Agadah, as far as when you have a conflict between the Masorah and the Midrash Halakha. Again, that is subject to dispute, but the way that we end up going is with the Midrash Halakha.
Topic for another.
Okay, so I think I'll. So, anybody have any questions? Yes, mommy.
Yeah. Okay. So go the whole thing of who Keturah is, but doesn't Abraham? My mistake. I'm not looking at it. Abraham has more children with his other wives. Well, whether they're concubines or wives, there are more children, right?
Yeah.
There are more children. So. How can we never hear about them afterwards? All we hear about is Yitzchak and Yishmael and who they have and who their children are. And this wife who you've just painted, if it's Hagar, okay, so then Yishmael is her offspring, and then we know about her offspring and who he becomes. But the other offspring are just like, they just like are people who just, are they like background? Are those all the other, are those, who do they become? And if they are children of Abraham, shouldn't they be important like Ishmael and Yitzchak are children of Abraham?
Okay, so let's pull up. Let's pull up the. Sorry, let me just pull this up, everybody. Okay, so let's look at their names. And we'll see what happened to them. Okay, so two people see these names? Can everybody see my screen? Yes?
It's really small.
It's really small? I can make it bigger then. All right, I'll make it bigger. Not to worry. Okay, you know? Yes?
Okay.
Okay, good.
Same, okay, yes.
There we go.
Okay, hopefully it updated on perfect screens now, so we can see. Okay, here we go. Right, so notice these names. So some of these names look familiar, some of them don't. So you know some of these names are names of places that you hear later on.
Uh-huh.
Right, so, such as, I'll highlight those. So we've got Midian, we've got Dedan, we've got Ashurim, right? So right? So the rest are, I'm not sure if these are, right? So the answer is that what happens to them? So some of them, seemingly, they may have come off and become their own countries, their own nations. Right, because we know that Avram was called Av Amon Goyim, the father of many nations. So again, not that doesn't necessarily mean just, you know, B'nai Yisrael, and then B'nai Yisrael, B'nai Adom, and B'nai Yishmael, but it seems like it can even include other nations as well. That's so for Abba and Goyim. So the other option for why we don't hear, that's one option, is that they become these later, that they become these other nations later. The other option is that the names are simply coincidence and that there's no relation. The question is, why do they disappear from the map and why would they disappear? So the answer to that would be, is that they're, as opposed to for Yishmael, who gets a specific covenant from God, meaning that Hagar had her own promise that her kids will become a nation. And we see that it's that commitment with Yishmael. We also see that it's that, again, there's the covenant that Hashem made with Avram, the second with Yitzchak, and then with Yitzchak, and then with and then again with Yaakov, and also it's seconded to it again, and Isaac has his own blessing on the side. So each of them are, because they get that blessing, they in turn end up becoming their own separate nations. On the other hand, what is the conclusion, the last thing we hear from them? Of the B'nai Pelakshim is Vayishalchem, May Al Yisak B'no, B'donochai, Ked Mal Arath Kedem. So they get sent east to the land of Kedem. So who the last person who went east? Who went east of Eden? Kedem Yigan Eden. Right? Who's the last person to do that? Last person to do that was Cain, who, after he goes east of Eden, he then disappears. Right? Meaning is that he gets wiped out. So the other option is that they ended up going east to Kedem, and then they in turn faded away to nothing. Whether they literally died or just they were no longer because they're considered to be significant. So that would be the question of what happened. Those are the options for what happened to B'nai Tura. Does that solve the question?
Sort of, but none of them are special. We see their adversaries of Israel, but they don't become anything. Only these two children were picked to become something.
Correct. So if God didn't pick them, then they just kind of disappear. That's a right, or they did become, you know, Midian and Dedan, which are places, and Ashur, which we do know of. So, like, that's the question: like, what happened? And it's a good question.
That's right.
Yeah, Elena, so you got a question also?
Yeah. Okay. So when it says "believe nay pilagshim," so what you were saying in the arguments when someone has that in the singular, so like one concubine instead of more than one?
Correct. The version of the Torah that seemingly that Rav had spelled it chaser, not male. It said pilakshim. There's this yud was missing. So yeah, if the Sefer Torah is missing a letter, male and chaser, the Sefer Torah is not puzzle. I want to stress that it's not puzzle. It should be fixed, but it's not immediately possible. So it's not so bad. But on the other hand, it is a problem that, again, that the Torah is different than it should be. So that's what the whole answer is that even though it's
a problem about that, if they say concubines and it's really only,
meaning,
they say it's only one and that's how they say it, it blows their whole argument.
Right.
Unless he has another wife we don't know about. Another concubine.
Right. So again, so either way, the Pshuto Shel Mikra, the simple understanding of the text, is he had, in order for Avram to have multiple wives, Pilag Shim, right? So again, that means he has to have Hagar and Keturah being separate people. Right? So again, Rav has an excellent Midrash. Do you have to accept it? No. Right, if you're like, I don't like it, and like interesting supports, and like that does sound pretty good, but you're like, yeah, but it said plural and that's it, then like, that's fine. Like you don't, again, as opposed to Midrash Halakha, which you might be forced to accept if you don't like it, with Midrash Agada, you can simply say no, and that's okay.
Yeah. A part of having a Midrash is to find out what we learned from it. So I don't see anything extra that we really learn from the message from it.
Well, from the extra message you learn from Hagar being Keturah? So the message, I think, is...
Yeah.
Okay, so what message do we learn by being the same person? So for that, I think that's something Izzy pointed out earlier, that the message that we can gain from it... You know, let me get back to the original slideshow. Is... Right? So the part that you can gain is the part where it says, see the drash about mekuteret, right? Ushmak tura amrelish mekuteret mitzvot amasim tovim. What you see is that even though we seemingly had abandoned Hagar as being a character we don't care about, it turns out that she, right? You know, like she was banished, she had no hope, right? She was kicked out, right, with her son. But here's that it's saying that no. There is always a chance for tshuva, even when you think that all hope is gone, right? You've literally been banished. Point is that it's not just because you've been banished, there still is an opportunity to return. Assuming that you do mitzvot and masim tovim, assuming you do full tshuva, then maybe your previously negative decree could be flipped back around, right? Which would be a very good message, because again, Hagar, again, being the being the mother of a Rebecca Shot, of an archer, which means somebody who murders from a distance for a living, to going back to being the proper wife of Avram Avinu, it was a very big turnaround, shift of events. It shows that even though, again, she had sank pretty far, she actually is able to come back around. So that would be in addition to the understanding, you know, who is who, that's something else that you can gain from Hagar being Tura. Does that help?
Okay, that's okay, yeah.
Okay. So I have a question for everybody for next week. Beit Midrash Zichron Rondov is running a Shavuot Ton on Jewish identity for the Bayit. So we will not be able to have this Uncovering Midrash at 8:15 as we normally do, because they have a program running at 8 o'clock. So question, would people like to move forward to 7 o'clock, or would you like to take a break and continue in 2 weeks? So I'm just curious as to everybody's schedules and what works for people. So what do we think?
I'm new, so I don't have a vote right now.
Everybody has a vote. If you're on right now, you have a vote. And those who were here last week, I'll email them too, and I'll ask them. Also, if you want to get emails with, I'll send it with the PowerPoints and send a reference.
We have a wedding next week. We won't be here.
We'll be here, right? We have a wedding.
Okay.
We have an in-person.
Okay.
You're lucky you're going to have that.
So
and we vote on paper ballots, by the way. We vote on paper ballots.
I'm sorry.
Canadian.
So who would be interested in there being one at 7 o'clock next week as opposed to at 8:15? So my parents are out. Who else is going to be available at 7 o'clock next week? Okay, so see, Elaine is raising her hand. Izzy, would you be available at 7, or would you? Okay, you would be. Moshe,
if I don't go to Hamilton.
What?
If I don't go to see my grandchildren in Hamilton.
Okay. They're welcome to join, too. They can join the Zoom. I'll make sure to pick a kid-friendly midrash next week. Don't worry.
Maybe we should just let's cancel it for next week and then.
So that's what seems to be the. Okay, so we'll take a pause for 1 week and we'll continue in 2 weeks at 8:15. Sounds good.
Okay. We'll make an announcement about the Shavuoton.
Right. So there's the Shavuoton. Everybody should be getting an email about it as well.
Thank you, Shaiach.
All right, so Shavuot Tov is at 8 o'clock every evening next week. So it should be good. So there we go.
Sunday.
Okay. Let's.